on this episode of Still Loading, I like riding horses.
All right. Okay.
Welcome to this new episode of Still Loading. I am your host, Josh. This is actually the last episode prior to the big PS2 retrospective of the summer of PlayStation 2. And continuing on with our conversation from the last episode, Andrew from the Experience Point is here with me again. Andrew, how are you doing today?
I am still doing great because it's the same day.
It's the same day. And as for those who remember from the last episode, Andrew is part of a YouTube channel called The Experience Point. You can check them out at the EXP Point on YouTube. You can just Google that, I guess.
Yep. It's called The Experience Point, but it's just The EXP Point. You can Google that. We keep talking about this crossover that we've been doing, but technically, this is the first time we've officially done it in any capacity, but I've been on for several episodes, and actually, mm-hmm. Triana, who you may know from The Experience Point,
yes,
was just on for the Kingdom Hearts episode,
yep,
which was fantastic, by the way. I really enjoyed that one, not just because it's my friend and my wife, but...
I like how you you lead with friend first over. I mean, that shows where your priorities
bros before
are.
Bros before hoes.
Well, no,
she'd be mad if she.
No, I meant that you called her your friend before your wife.
Oh, you're the friend.
Oh.
I said I enjoyed the episode, not just because it's my friend and my wife.
Oh, I thought you were using two different terms for Driana.
Oh, I mean, she is that.
But... She's your friend and your wife.
Yeah. That's how it should be.
Okay, I misread that entirely.
So you thought I wasn't talking about you at all?
I went with a really romantic view. I thought you were being super sweet about to your wife there. Like, she's my friend and my wife, not just my wife.
No, because I would have said my best friend.
Oh, okay. I'm not yet. We're talking about Shadow of the Colossus. Shadow of the Colossus is the spiritual sequel to Ico. It's not a direct sequel. We kind of talked about that last episode about how Fumito Ueda didn't think that Ico really needed a sequel, so he didn't give it one.
He almost made one.
He almost made
Nico.
One. Because this game was going to be called Nico, Ni meaning two in Japanese, and then Ico, the original game, so Nico as this bizarre Japanese portmanteau of... that's one of my favorite words,
by the way. Oh, I can't not think of Pokemon when I hear portmanteau.
Because
a lot of Pokemon names are portmanteaus of things.
Are they? Just a quick example, real quick.
I wish Chandelure, it's a chandelier, but
it drops on the floor.
No, not it's lore, LURE.
Oh, okay,
because it lures you in because it's a ghost type.
Okay, so drops on the floor. What a dumb joke. That was my own joke. I know.
I was gonna give you a pass until you called yourself out again.
No, it was pretty bad. but we're talking about Shadow of the Colossus. Because it's a great game, and it's the reason I chose this game specifically to end the summer of PlayStation 2 for, PlayStation 2's 20th anniversary.
Yeah, I can't believe
that. It's just weird, right? It's 20 years, and this...
My hair's getting gray just thinking about it.
I was about to go in this whole monologue about how thankful I am for this series, but there's still one episode left. It's still the big PS2 retrospective, which, once again, is already recorded. Though I realized afterwards I need to add in some things to it that I forgot when I recorded, so hopefully I can find some creative way.
Pickups.
Creative
we'll
way
fix
to
it
do
in post.
That. Yeah, exactly. But I figured we would end the game part of the series before we did the PS2 retrospective with Shadow of the Colossus, because Shadow of the Colossus... I think overall, I don't want to say it's the best game on the console because it's very subjective, but I think it is the most important game on the console in a weird way. Huh. And it's just because of what it did for video games as a medium in terms of how they are treated in terms of respect for people outside of video games. Because it's considered one of those examples of games as high art. And Ico kind of did this, but it was very different.
Yeah.
And Shadow of the Colossus is just a super important game because I remember when you told me about it and I picked it up for my PS2 and I actually played it for the first time. I mean, it wasn't recent, but I beat it. Unlike Ico, I did beat it. I beat it forever ago.
Under the bus.
Yeah. But I beat it, like, I want to say in like 2012, 2013, maybe a little bit later than that. I was still living with my parents at the time, and I remember going down to my friend's house down the road, Tristan, who's been on the podcast before, and I played it on his PS2, brought my memory card over and was playing it more over there and showing him the game, because I told him, like, I'm pretty impressed by this, considering this is a PS2 game.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, I was already dating my wife at the time, and we started dating, yeah. So, 2012, 2013, yeah. We've been together for a minute now.
Yeah.
And so, I remember playing it, and this is a really random thing that I remember I was super impressed by. Aggro is your horse in the game.
Aggro?
His hair on his mane. It flowed really nicely for a PS2 game.
And the main character, Wander, or the Wanderer, his kind of flappy tunic that
That's
he wears
a bad
really
motion
nicely.
Right oh, now.
Well, his flappy tunic.
For those watching on YouTube, you're gonna see some stuff. Andrew's into some things.
Hey, I like flappy tunics. What can I say? You show me somebody with a flappy tunic, it's done deal.
Wanda, just forget about it.
Forget about it.
I was really impressed by that for some reason. I don't know why. I was like, wow, this is a PS2 game? That's incredible. And what I think works about the game is, or the reason why it's so important, I should say, and we'll get into what I think about what works about it, is the reason why it's so important is just because it really kind of challenged the idea of what a game, like what game design could be.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that there's no, with the exception of the boss, well, actually, no, the reason it's challenges it, it's a game of nothing but bosses. There's no fights in between it. Every single, like, thing that you have to do that's aggressive, any fight that you have is with a boss.
So, but are they all bosses, or are none of them bosses, since they're all kind of equal?
They're all bosses.
Because a boss typically means something bigger and badder than all the other stuff that you fight in the game, and you don't fight anything else in the game, so...
That's true. But a boss is also meant to test anything that you've learned, but at the same time, like, to kind of, I guess it's kind of proving your point, you're learning gameplay mechanics through the boss fights.
Yeah.
Through these fights. But it basically... you can tell the idea that is, though, to make a game of nothing but boss fights. But yeah. You're right. If there's no lesser enemies, what is really a boss? There's no juxtaposition to balance out that ratio.
Unless you consider the lizards, the little, small enemies.
The small enemies that you could just pew with it your bow and arrow.
Yeah.
So Shadow of the Colossus came out on October 18th, 2005 in North America and October 27th, 2005 in Japan. And once again, it's developed by Fumito, or the director was Fumito Ueda. Mm-hmm. I always forget what his development team name is. It's Team Ico, or Ico, excuse me, I believe is the name of his development team. And they're part of Sony. I think
they were called something else when Ico came out, though.
Maybe. They weren't Team Ico at the time, I don't think.
It's kind of like Studio Ghibli. They made Castle of Cagliostro before they were technically Studio Ghibli.
And to tie Eco into this, other than the Nico thing, there's a little Easter egg if you have a save file.
I was gonna say you said, "Oh, I took my memory card." Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I didn't have an Eco save file on my memory card, so I didn't get it. So when you have an Eco save file on your memory card, what happens is the mark on Aggro's forehead, pretty much right down his nose, it changes from a diamond shape to kind of it's a spike. It looks like a spike or like one of Eco's horns, I guess, but straight down.
Does he change colors too? I think he goes from black to brown if you have a...
It's just a slight color. I don't think he did, but I also... Okay. I could be wrong.
I might also be thinking of like New Game Plus, because I think if you do it a certain amount of times, he's white and then or brown and then white, maybe. I know the horse changes colors. That's all I know.
Yeah, I like Easter eggs in games, and that's a lot better than that watermelon thing that we were talking about at the end of the last episode.
Yeah, if you want to know what the F that was, watch/listen to the Eco episode.
Oh my gosh, it's so stupid. So let's... not the ending, but our talk, what we said at the end.
Yeah.
Maybe
don't go back and listen to it.
No, do. They need to learn whatever the fuck I talked to, whatever that stupid food I was.
Yeah.
It's gross. So Ico, that was the last game. Shadow of the Colossus. I'm getting all confused now. Shadow of the Colossus. What the gameplay is like, because the story is simple. And I remember you telling me about the story, that it's very open to your interpretation.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, the story takes like 2 seconds to really explain overall, right? You have have a kid named Wander, probably a teenager, it looks like, named Wander, carrying some girl. You don't know who the girl is, what relationship the girl has to him or anything. And he's carrying her to this shrine. And you meet this god thing called Dorman. And fun fact, Dorman is voiced by both a man and a woman to kind of give it a genderless voice. Which I thought was a really, because you couldn't really put a pin on what it was.
Then. Except for the very end for some reason. They remove, I think they have the female voice after the twist happens. So you can read into that however you want.
Interesting. I did not know that. So you take this girl to or Wander takes this girl to the shrine. It seems, and she's passed out. She's unconscious. And it seems like it's to save her.
I think she's like dead.
Is she's dead?
Yeah, because like there's a couple of shots like where it's close up on her and you can tell she's not breathing.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and he says to Dorman, like, I was told that this land was somewhere I could go to return souls to people's bodies. So I think it is implied that she's dead.
And so you make a deal with Dorman, and he agrees to bring her back to life if he will kill all the Colossi.
Yep.
How many? There's 16. 16 Colossi. So I actually have a note. There was originally planned to be 48.
Yeah, there was going to be a ton.
48.
And then it was like, oh, we'll do 24. And then could you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that game's not the longest, but I mean, you can probably beat it in like 8 hours. But
that would
48?
Still be
48.
If it took 8 hours to defeat 16 of them, it's over. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't think you could. Anything over 10 on that game, I think, would be a little much. I think the game is good at the length that it was.
Yeah. I think it's the right amount.
So once they did condense. Now, the 48 was meant to be more of just kind of like, this is the idea phase. You know, it was all propositions. You know, there was all just like, what about this? What about this? It was all the spitballing that was going on behind the scenes, trying to figure out what types of Colossi they would want to use for the fights. And they narrowed it down to 24, and then time constraints forced them to narrow it down to 16. And I actually have a quote here. I actually have a quote here from the producer, from Kenji Kaito. And he was saying, we would condense the individual elements of two Colossi down into one. That way we weren't just throwing them away, but rather combining them together to make figuring out how to defeat them even more interesting. So, and they gave it was on a Did You Know Gaming video that I watched, that they kind of talked about it, and they listed a few of the examples. I honestly can't remember them all off the top of my head, because there was about three or four, and I'm just like, I don't have time to write all these down right now.
Yeah.
But they would condense the two, which I think was smart. Like you said, I think anything, 16 was a good number, man.
Yeah.
And the last one, I will say, was a little anticlimactic compared to the rest, but.
Oh, you think?
I mean, because if I remember correctly, the last one is you kind of running through trenches like in a zigzag type of thing. And then you have to climb up.
That's to like get to him. Yeah,
that's to get.
So there's like a whole portion of just even getting up to the guy. And he's like that huge tower one.
So
which I thought was, well, it's not my favorite one.
Well, let's get into it. So that's the story. So you're killing these Colossi so that way you can save whoever this girl is to you, girlfriend, sister, mother,
Mono or Momo, I think her name was.
I don't know. I think Mono. I think,
yeah.
Or Mono, I guess, Mono would be. You have to defeat this Colossi. And what I loved about it, I mean, it's sad, but every time you defeat one of the Colossi, this black smoke comes out and like it almost looks like it possesses Wander.
Yeah.
And it gives you, without saying anything, it kind of gives you that idea like, maybe this isn't a good idea. Maybe I'm not doing the right thing, but you're kind of forced to by Dorman or whatever, just because of whoever this girl is to you, you care a lot about her. Mm-hmm. And the whole crux of the game is that you have these very long segments of these beautiful open spaces. And even on the PS2, it's very empty, but it doesn't look bad. Like it's odd. Like it's a lot of empty space with not a lot to do in it, but there is... It's just interesting enough. And there are some small elements that you can do. Aren't there like shrines you can find or something like that?
Yeah, there's like shrines where they always have like a lizard running around that you can shoot to get your stamina up, and you can save at the shrines. But yeah, like we got into it a little bit in the eco episode about how, like, the world feels empty, but it feels purposeful. Like, it feels like lived in, like there's a lot of history to the world. Like, you'll find just like random collapsed structures and like, why is this random gate looking thing here? Like, what was this? How many years, eons ago that it might have been? There's so much like history, and the world just feels alive.
It kind of reminds me of what Bloodborne would end up doing and what the Dark Souls games do, is where they tell a lot of the story through the world building, through the world itself, which I don't play these games because I'm bad at them, and I don't like being bad at games. But they do that a lot in this. And what I like about that is that it just, it kind of, like you said, it makes you question what happened here. Mm. Why are things the way it is? And actually, one of the Colossi, they originally intended one of the Colossi to be a water fight. It was, I think it was, hold on, I wrote it down, the 11th Colossus, Leo. And it was, they were supposed to be in the water. It was, you were supposed to actually fight Leo in the water. Hmm. But when they scrapped that, but they kept Leo in, they made it so it was almost like pools, like remnants of what used to be a lake or a bed of water. So they took a scrapped idea and turned it into story through the environment. Mm-hmm. And I actually have another quote.
It's like the dried up lake bed.
Yeah.
One. Yeah.
And I have a quote from one of the designers, Masanori Kajita. The pools of water that remain around the completed arena were previously an entire lake. It was just that we changed how to defeat Leo, and thus the arena came to be the way it is today. Hmm. Ueda told us to make it seem as though long ago there was once a bigger lake in the area. It was fun to create.
Yeah. So, and you get that feel throughout pretty much the whole game, where it feels like at one time this was a very different world, and it's gradually changed over time, or maybe not gradually. Maybe there was a catastrophe or something that happened.
Mm-hmm. And let's get into the boss fights.
That's pretty much all the game is.
I mean, that's the story. There's not much else except for the plot twist at the end, which we will talk about after we talk about the Colossi. Maybe we'll go into all 16 Colossi. Maybe we won't. You might remember more than I do. I remember specific moments of playing them. I think the couple that I had to look up, I think it was, one was the fifth one, the bird one. I think that was the fifth one.
Yeah, right? Fifth or sixth.
And so the first and fifth one, I think the first one, like, aesthetically just looks amazing.
Yeah.
I think the first Colossus is one of the coolest looking designs of anything.
Yeah.
And there was a whole campaign, like this marketing campaign leading up to the release of the game. Did you hear about this?
I don't know.
So I wrote part of it down. It was really crazy. There was a blog called Giantology. Giantology.com. It's not up anymore. But basically what they did was they had this fictional enthusiast. Like he was, I forget what his job was prior, like what this fictional character is, but his name was
Alphonse Elric.
Yeah. Eric Belson. And he was a fictional character, and there's video clips of like corpses of the Colossi washed up on beaches or like towering tall. And it was all fake. It wasn't real.
Yeah.
But they got like millions of hits because it was this weird thing where like, holy shit, are these things actually real?
Mm-hmm.
And they really kind of put it into, they really try to make it feel like it was a real thing leading up to it. But I don't know if they really announced that it was in ties to the game until afterwards. Like, that's a cool marketing thing.
Yeah.
I always find those marketing ideas really weird when they don't tell you what it's for until after it's already there.
Oh, man. Like the Halo 2 I Love Bees thing.
Was that? I don't know. I didn't hear about that.
It was a weird alternate reality game where they put up this fake website that was like about a woman selling honey, but it was like being hacked, and then it was like this rampant AI. And without getting too far into those weeds, because I can do a whole show about that, of course I talked about Halo in the last one too.
I haven't done a Halo episode yet, but like you,
please have me
our
on.
Friend JR, if I could track him down, I remember him from when we took Japanese class. Yep, he'd be really into it.
But the crazy thing was, just a little fun fact about the I Love Bees campaign, was basically people decoded that there was, you know, these places and times where people needed to be, and then payphones were going to ring. And
in real life.
And people, it was an alternate reality game. So people were doing all this stuff in real life to figure out stuff about Halo 2. But they didn't know it was about Halo 2 until the very end of it, when you got the call. So this was 2004. So
when payphones still existed.
When payphones still existed, and there was one, you can hear, you could look up, there's footage and recording of this. Somebody answered the phone while Hurricane Katrina was going on.
What?
And the person on the other end had to break character and be like, dude, there's a freaking hurricane. You got to get out of here, man. Like, this is not a game. Like, it is a game, but like, it's, don't mess around with this stuff.
Are you yeah, shitting
you
me?
You can look up the footage for it. It's wild.
Is this on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Oh my God. That's, what?
Yeah. So after you finish this episode, go check that out.
Go watch this on YouTube because you'll just see pure disbelief on my face.
Yeah.
What? Oh my God.
Yeah, it was nuts. Anyway.
That's, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to transition out of that. Like, I'm legitimately flabbergasted by that. That is, oh my gosh.
Well, you said the boss fights. So yes, yeah, that first, yes. The very first one, it is a good, like, it's like the Ryu of that. It's like, it's not too big. It's big enough that you like, whoa, but it's not too crazy. It's got like the hammer weapon and it gives you a good idea of everything you can expect from the game because you, and again, in typical Eco did this very well too, where it tells you everything you need to do before you even get to that fight. So you're climbing stuff. It's showing you that you can jump and grab and then turn around and jump.
It is a boss fight then because they taught you all the mechanics beforehand and you had to master it for the boss fight.
That's fair.
Fuck you.
I wasn't arguing for it. I'm just
messing with you.
But you climb up this like little precipice thing and you have to leave aggro behind and you get up there and you like climb up the thing and then like there's a rumble and like birds are flying by and then you just see the foot just come like crashing in front of you and it like displaces the rocks and like the camera literally pans up this gigantic thing's body. And it's funny that we're talking about the marketing for it because one of the very first things that sold me on buying this game was I think it was in Game Informer. I got a poster that it was one of those like, whoo, you hold up the magazine and it folds out and you're like, whoo, mama. But it folded out like 19 times and there was this really tall, thin poster of the soldier. I forget its name or what number it is, but the really, really tall Colossus with the sword. And it was just like a silhouette of that Colossus and Wander just super tiny at the bottom. And it said, some mountains are scaled, others are slain.
Yes. And I was that is a great tagline.
It really is.
That should have been on this episode of Stone, not the stupid, I want to ride horses. It should have been some mountains are scaled, others are slain.
That's fine.
I forgot about that. That is such,
it was a really good marketing.
I think after you told me about the game, I looked it up and I saw that tagline. I'm like, that's fucking dope.
Yeah.
That is such a good,
I mean, besides
tagline.
The fact that these are also scaled and slain, like you're literally climbing up these guys.
And I think that was one of the things that sold me on the game in the first place was because that was even, that was, at that time I'm old enough, I've played enough games when I first played this game, you know, 2013, where you kind of, like, as you get older and you play more games, you kind of become a little bit jaded and not in the sense of like, jaded, I think, is the wrong term, but maybe just complacent? Desensitized to it. Yeah. So you don't have that sense of wonder anymore that you did when you were a kid. You know, you can always remember the first time you played a game and you're like, holy crap, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
For me, I remember one of my first reactions to seeing a video game was over at a church friend's house. They were playing Mario. And I was like, wait, this is a cartoon you can control? And that was my thought. Funny. I'm like, this is a cartoon that I'm literally controlling on screen.
Wow.
And in my head, it broke my brain. I'm like, what is this witchcraft? I didn't know what witchcraft was at the time either. But and so that, like, you lose that. You lose that a lot of times when you are a kid. Or as you get older, you get more experiences. And I actually forgot about it until just this episode, that the first time playing Shadow of the Colossus, scaling that first Colossus, I went, oh, okay, so this is like, this isn't like some bullshit where they usually tell you like you're gonna climb this mountain and then there's a path that you go up,
yeah,
or they have some cutscene that lets you get up to the top of it, right? No, you're doing this.
You start at ground level
and you are walking up that bitch. Yep. Like, you are finding a way to get to the top of it.
And I also really like
you're gonna get on top.
Oh my. I also really like how they introduce the fight as almost like as a threat, because it just walks right past you. Like, you're so small, it doesn't even bother looking at you, and it walks away and it's just like the camera's shaking, like stuff's rattling off of the walls and like dust is falling down and the birds are like flying around it. And if you like shoot it with an arrow or if you whistle, it'll just slowly like kind of turn around and start walking towards you. And then you're like, oh, I got to fight this thing. And like you said, how are you going to kill this mountain? Got to climb to the top first. Got to see where the weak point is. Put up your sword.
I understand why they need a visual marker for the weak point. That's the only part of it that's kind of immersion breaking.
Video gamey.
Because you like, where else? But it has to be, though, that you have to have that concession because otherwise the player is just going to be hacking at its life.
Right.
Because what's going to happen is you're going to either have the whole thing covered in stone so that you can't damage it until you find the open spot to stab it to death. Which would be boring. Visually, that might be it's much more visually interesting to see, like, you know, stone, like the stone gauntlets that the things would wear and the stone armor that would go across its chest
and
stuff like that.
All the fur and stuff.
And for you to climb on. So visually, it's a lot more interesting to see it that way. And if they didn't have that, if you didn't have those weak points, then a player could just stand at the bottom and just stab at the legs. It would take forever, but you could eventually take out the enemy.
Yeah.
And you can kind of do that with the bow and arrow. Like you can slowly whittle way down their health. I got a chunk down before
I
figured it out.
Isn't it capped though? Like I think you can only do a certain amount of damage with the bow before you have to hit the weak point. Yeah.
But so with that weak point, it forces the player to literally explore their body. No, explore, climb the mountain, climb that colossus and explore around it. Explore where you with on that colossus's body.
Yeah, because
its weak points.
They are almost in and of themselves like parts of the environment. Because they're so freaking
there's some
huge.
Of them that there wasn't there one that's like a tree or no, it's up in a tree. There was one I could have sworn that was like not quote unquote part of the environment, but it had like stuff growing. I don't know. I forget now. I'm remembering one where I had to climb up into like a tree canopy and fight it up top there.
Hmm.
It might have been the third one. Hold on. I'm going to look it up while we're...
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Let me see here. If this is the one I'm thinking of.
The third one is the really tall one I was talking about with the sword.
Yeah, that thing. And you have to climb up. You have to run up the sword.
Yeah.
It's very anime-ish.
It's super anime, and I love it. And you can either be super crafty with it because he has armor going around his arm, so you can't straight up climb up the arm. You can be really crafty with it and stay on the sword, and when he brings the sword back up, you can jump and use the momentum and get to his chest. Or there's that big like stone disc in the ground that if you lure him to that and he hits that with his sword, it'll crack the armor off and you can climb
that's
up
how it. That's how I beat him.
Yeah.
There's just so much, like, the visually, this game is just so interesting. Just because the colossus are just so entertaining to look at. I think my favorite colossus is that first one, because that's the first time where you're just, oh, God, this is what this game's going to be. It's that first moment of realization. And what is cool about it is it's not like that childhood wonderment that I'm talking about ended there. What I liked was after you had that, the way they revealed and had you fight the other colossi kind of brought that back. The next one I remember is the bird. I think it's the fifth or sixth one. I didn't quite understand it, but I remember being like, because it does these swooping patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I think it's telling me to jump on its wing, but that can't be it because that thing would impale me. It's going so fast.
Yeah.
No, that's what you're supposed to do. Yep. I had to look that up just because I was like, there's no way. Like, I'm not going to waste my time if this is not going to work and have to die and run all the way back to that colossus, because when you die, I think you have to travel back to them, right?
Unless you saved at one of the shrines, you got to go all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, like they give you, this is one of the points I have actually for later on, but they give you a lot of visual cues as to what you need to do. Like for that bird one, when it comes flying down, you can see on the front of its wings, there's a patch of fur. And you've established, like, mentally through the first couple, like, okay, fur means I can climb it. That's how I get onto it.
And on its wings, it has patches of fur. That's how I figured it out.
That's what I was saying.
I was just clarifying. I didn't see it on its chest. I saw it on its wings.
Oh, did I say chest? I meant wings. I'm sorry.
Same thing.
Yeah, it comes, like, swooping down and, like, kind of skims the water and, like... Oh, man. Visually?
And then as you're flying with it, like you just see the wind going by and you're like having to crawl over top of it.
And that's when the music kicks in. Da-da, each Colossus has their own like boss music, and that's one of the only times where you hear music in the game, and they're all just so like,
and it's dynamic too. It's only like if you're just fighting it, and it's not, if you're not climbing it actively trying to find its weak spot, then the music's not playing, from what I remember.
Yeah, it definitely is dynamic. And like if you're running around, and certain later ones will like be shooting stuff at you, and like if there's danger happening, it'll start to pick up a little bit, and then once you actually get on top of it is when like it really, the music swells. And I love stuff like that.
What are some of your favorite colossi? I mentioned mine was the bird, and then also the first one, but like you mentioned the treetop knight was one of yours, that was the third colossus.
Yes, he's probably my favorite. Gaius, he's my favorite visually, I think, just because he's so tall, and that's where you really get the scale of how he's like maybe two or three times taller than the first one. So you're like, holy crap, they keep getting bigger. But in
actually,
terms,
I can tell you, they have the sizes here on the wiki.
Oh wow,
on the wiki.
How big is this boy?
So the first one, the Minotaur guy, that guy is 72 feet tall, or 22 meters for you non-American, or for the rest of the world,
for you smart,
people. For everyone who actually uses a good measuring system
of measurement.
Then the Quadris, which is the second one, that's kind of like that bull-looking one, or ram. Actually, it's got ram horns. That is 100. Oh, he's a mammoth. 108 feet.
Jeez.
And then the knight, which is the third colossus, Gaius, is 108 feet or 33 meters.
Wow. Yeah. My favorite gameplay-wise isn't until the 13th phalanx, which is that really long one in the desert, that flying one.
Yes. That one was tough, too, because that one, as you're flying, he's got, like, what, sand sacks?
It's like the, it's like air sacks.
And you have to shoot them with the bow and arrow.
Yep, because you deflate the, like, balloons that he has on his body, and then he comes down real low. And then you have to basically, like, train car robbery. Like, you have to jump from your horse. You have to ride alongside the thing's wings, jump from your horse onto it, and then you're climbing back up. And then it takes off into the sky again, and you're, like, looking down, like, holy crap.
Isn't there one that goes like under the in sand too?
Yeah, there's like a sandworm one. There is a water one, the eel.
I don't like the eel one that much.
I like that one because it was like electrified, so you had to make sure to stay away from the spines when they came out of the water, or else they'd shock you.
I think it's this guy Hydrus. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. He is 78 feet tall. Wow. Length is 316. I mean, it's an eel.
He's super long.
I just think like the idea for it was such a good, I don't know, I still remember that sense of wonderment, and like I don't think I'll ever forget that, because it just, I don't think I've played a game other than that, and maybe Horizon with its visuals. Horizon's visuals like blew me away, and that gave me that childlike sense of wonder too. But they I don't know, nothing really seems close to that feeling anymore, just because it's the feeling of climbing the colossi and the feeling of figuring out which one, and everyone was so unique. You even had a small one. You had that kind of like that,
there's
like,
two
there's two small ones, right? I forget which ones they are, but it's interesting because they throw a wrench in all your strategies, because you can't climb those things.
Yep.
You have to find some way to almost knock them unconscious or knock them out or something like that.
Yeah, the one that's like in this fire temple, you have to take a stick and like put it in the fire, and then you shake the fire at it, which scares it, and then it falls off onto its back and like breaks the back armor, so then you can jump on top of it. And then there's another one that's a small one that's like towards the end where it's running and you're on these pillars and it's smashing into the pillars, and you're like, the pillars are literally falling over and you're jumping from pillar to pillar, and then eventually one like falls on him and breaks the armor. But I always thought it was weird that there's two like very small ones. I almost like didn't like, I liked the mechanics of figuring it out, but I didn't like that it was like, are these ones like hamsters to the other ones? Like, I don't know. It didn't feel as important.
I agree with that. It was kind of a weird, I just remember coming across him like, this is the next Colossus.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have that, that's another reason I'm glad they whittled it down to 16 instead of 48.
Yeah.
Because at some point you're just gonna get repetitive. Like not everyone is gonna have such high quality. The fact that they were able to focus, the fact that they've narrowed their focus to 16 and there's still kind of some duds in there, was kind of I'm glad they did not do the 48 they originally had pitched.
Same.
And even the 24 they originally intended. So it just, I don't know. So those were some of our favorite Colossi. The overall atmosphere is something it's weird.
That's where I was going to go next.
It's like, feels like something that you could talk forever about, but at the same time, there's almost nothing to say about it. It's because I don't know how to describe it. I feel like you could go on for a while.
Okay.
So let's hear the overall atmosphere is very, it's interesting. It's very lonely.
It's lonely. Yeah. We're on the same page there.
Go on though. What are you going to say?
There's this intense loneliness and something that's even like in the, first off, I'll say, did you play or have you seen the PS4 remaster?
I have seen it. I have not played it.
Oh my God. Freaking Blue Point. They're doing the Demon Souls remake. That looks amazing. This is on another level. But one of the things that I do have slight issue with is in the remake, for all of its absolute glory and splendor, it doesn't have the quite hazy feel that the PS2 one did. Because on the PS2, there was a lot of bloom. Like, it was very, like, soft lighting everywhere, and it kind of felt ethereal. And it feels really like, from the moment that the camera follows Wander on the horse into they're called the Forbidden Lands. You come out of the little cave or path through these giant rocks, and then the camera just like gets blown out with this bright light. And it's that haziness kind of remains throughout the whole game. And it really feels like you're on some kind of ethereal plane that's not where he belongs. And it feels so alive, and it feels so, I don't know if I want to say alive, because it feels like a memory almost.
Yeah, I agree. Saying it's alive wouldn't be the best thing, because there's not a lot of life in that world other than the Colossi. It's, I mean, you still have the birds and everything, but yeah, it feels very much like this is a world that has been long forgotten by civilization. I don't want to say by time, because time is still, you know, happening. It's still ongoing there.
Yeah,
it feels like a world. And actually, I mean, they really separate that section from the rest of the world, because the bridge you ride in on is towering above you.
Yeah,
and I think that was one of my favorite visually. Like, I thought it was visually striking, that spot, how you would ride across this tower, and it's just these large swaths of land, like just not towering, but all like just as far as the eye can see, and it's in a valley. It's like this weird cliff's edge that where the bridge is a part of to this temple, and the temple's in the center of it. And it just feels very much like this is a land. It's like the, what is it from the Lion King? Not the Pride Lands. It's the Shadowlands.
Everything the light touches.
Yeah. It feels
about
like
that shadowy spot.
It feels
that's
like
New Jersey. You must never go there.
Come on, Kevin Smith's from New Jersey.
That's true. There's one good thing.
Jay and Silent Bob, baby. No, but it very much feels like that, those Shadowlands, and not from Lion King, obviously, where that one was like everything was thorns and dying and everything. But it felt very much like this is a land where it's a sacred land. It's a cursed land.
That's why it's called the Forbidden Lands.
And it just, I mean, that makes sense. You know what? That makes a lot more sense now. But it just, it really gets that whole vibe of just never being touched by man.
Yeah.
And the only thing that goes in to ruin it is you.
Because you
kill all of its inhabitants, minus the birds and stuff like that. Yeah. But, and I think one of the reasons I don't want to go back to play it is because watching the Colossi die and then, because especially after you know the ending, but even before that, you, like I said, you get that feeling of like, maybe what I'm doing isn't the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's really some of the Colossi are peaceful. You can walk up next to them and they won't do anything, and you're killing them. And it feels so evil and wrong. Yeah. And you just, I like going back to it now, I just feel guilty. Yeah. I feel ashamed for playing. No, but I do, but not for playing the game, but for the actions that the game requires you to take. And it's kind of like, it's talking about it's like a cautionary tale where when you are blinded by your ambition, or you are blinded by some mission or purpose or something, and you are given and you have a chance to do what you've always wanted, but at the cost of everything, what happens to you? Because, well, I mean, we can lead this into the spoiler at the end. After you kill all the Colossi, after you finish it all up, you turn into one, right? Or something, or like a demon, essentially.
Yeah, you kind of, because as you mentioned, every time you kill one, this like black, like
dust or cloud or
smoke, like
smog
comes out of it, and like the, and their bodies all turn like jet black too. And it comes out of the body, and it gives you, I love that it gives you like 10 seconds to try to run away, and it always gets you no matter what.
I try to run every single time, so it doesn't matter.
And it catches up to you, and it scares you every single time, and they just spear into you, and you like spit up this like black dust, and you pass out. And it's, you basically find out after you kill all 16 Colossi that you are absorbing their souls, because Dorman was this entity, this deity maybe, that was broken up into 16 parts because it was evil, according to the people that, you know, end up chasing you, that they chase you to the Forbidden Lands in the end. And they're like, you idiot, he tricked you into putting him back together, and he kind of takes over your body. And then you play as that. The camera pulls back, and you're just this giant, scary, hulking looking thing, and you're like swiping guys left and right.
And it's showing, like I said, this is what you've become now. Let your ambition turn you into something that you shouldn't be, mm-hmm. that you never were intended to be.
And did you ever notice that his appearance changes very gradually?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, so like every few Colossi you kill, he gets dark bags under his eyes, his skin gets pale, there's like just a dirtiness to him and just like a darkness.
I remember that.
And it's so subtle. And
the statues blow up. There's statues of all the 16 Colossi, and they explode after each ton.
Yeah.
Ugh. And it just, and then at the very end, because I believe Mono, or I think her name's Mono, right? Or whatever the girl's name is that you brought there, she comes back to life, and she finds you, and you are just a kid now, right?
Yeah. So like the guys that come to try to stop you are, I assume, like from the same village, because they show some kind of familiarity with you, and they're like, "Oh, you dumb idiot! Like, we told you not to come here." And the leader is like this shaman looking guy named like Iman or something, and he goes to that pool, and he does some kind of spell, like a last ditch effort sealing spell again to reseal Dorman slash you who has become Dorman. And it starts pulling you in, and gradually the black smoke is being pulled off of you to the point where you basically become Wander again. And you're just like, the wind is pulling you, and you're running against it, and you can hang on to the stairs and stuff. And like, your body's being pulled like hurricane force winds, and it pulls you into it. And then the credits roll, and you're like, what? And then I think after the credits, it just shows Mono waking up. And then the aggro, we didn't even talk about the final, when you're going to the final Colossus. This made me cry so hard, the first and every time.
Once again, aggro is your horse that you've been with for the entirety of the game. You have dodged many a Colossi foot while riding aggro. And he's your faithful servant. He's pretty much like he doesn't, you know, behave like a dog, but his loyalty is that of a dog.
Yeah.
And it's just constantly, he's constantly coming back for you. He's constantly you, very much like you gain that relationship with Yorda in Ico, you gain that relationship with Aggro. You gain more of a relationship with your horse than when you do with the girl you're trying to save.
I know.
You're spending all the time on Aggro, yeah.
They give you a designated button to pet Aggro when you're riding him. You can push circle and you just, ugh. It's just like, oh, you could pet the horse. But, on the last Colossus, you're jumping over this bridge, and it's starting to collapse, and he bucks you off to the other side, and he just falls down this huge ravine, and it's heartbreaking every single time.
I remember that now. I blocked that from my memory because I was...
I don't blame you. Oh, no. The dead look in his eyes. Anyone who's listening on audio, please go to the Experience Point YouTube page and just watch Josh's soul leave his body thinking about aggro. But it's okay, because after the credits, Mono wakes up. She's looking around, and then she hears like a little like, and aggro comes trotting up. He's limping. He's very badly hurt, and she kind of like pets him. And then they walk to the pool where you were getting sucked into, and everything becomes full circle because she finds a little baby with horns on his head.
Which leads you to think that that's your Eco, then. Yeah. You would think.
Or you're at least
and
starting
I wonder,
the generational boys being born with horns in that village.
I wonder, is she Yorda's mother?
Ooh.
And you find out later. She's had to watch so many boys be sacrificed that I don't know why she decides to possess her daughter because of that, but I'm sure there's some reason.
Yeah.
I wonder if Last Guardian ties in with that. I've played Last Guardian, you haven't yet.
I've not, but neither of us have beaten it yet. Yeah. I don't think anything, I mean, I'm sure there's little Easter eggs and stuff, but it's really Eco and Shadow of the Colossus that have the most
connectivity,
yeah. But yeah, it is inferred that a lot of time has passed since Shadow of Colossus time, because there's like differences in the architecture and stuff, and the fact that in Eco they say this is for the good of the village, like you're clearly not the first boy to be born with horns, but it's just that connective tissue and that I still think it's one of the best twists endings in media ever.
I think you can kind of see it coming a little bit. It still doesn't, but it doesn't lessen the impact.
Yeah.
I remember when that happened, and because you kind of know what's going to happen. You know something bad's going to happen. I think that's why it wasn't as strong of a twist, because it's not like it came out of nowhere. But the thing is, though, is that you know something bad's going to happen, but you don't know what.
Yeah.
And you don't know why it's going to be bad, but you got in, like you said, they do that subtle thing of changing Wander's appearance. So that way you, even if you're not conscious of it, they are subliminally, I don't know if subliminally, but like subtly. Subtly foreshadowing for you that shit's going south and you need to, like, something's going to happen. You just wait.
Yeah. Playing it again, or rather watching Driana play it, because when in preparation for this episode, not that I was unfamiliar with this game, because this was probably my fifth time beating it, but I wanted to show it to Driana because she had never played it. So she went through it, and I didn't tell her anything, and she sort of figured out something was amiss, but then by the end was like, oh no.
Did
like,
she cry?
No.
She doesn't have a soul in it. I'm just kidding.
No. But it was, she figured it out because she's older, and a lot of things have done that kind of trope. But for me, back in 2005 when this came out, I was
that might have been 15. One of the first times that you experienced it.
Yeah, I was like, holy, like it blew my mind. And I was like, I was like the villain all along. Ah, you know? And that's when you really start to think about, like, yeah, it is really sad and almost like mournful and regretful music whenever you kill one. And it's that like, and it goes in slow motion. And they're just falling.
Yeah,
and they just
the giant. It feels very much like a hero falling in battle.
Yeah,
that's how they film the Colossi dying. It's a hero falling in battle. At least that's how I've always interpreted
it.
One thing before we talk about the controls of the game, because I feel like the controls are. I mean. Yeah, before we talk about the controls of the game, one last thing about Colossi. Did you ever hear about the urban myth of the 17th Colossus?
I have a lot to say about this.
Okay, perfect. Yes. So then you know more about it than I do, so we will talk about that at the very end, because I think that's a really interesting thing to close off the episode
with. That's a great
thing
to end on, yeah, you're right.
So let's talk about the controls then.
Okay.
The reason.
Oh, boy.
Just because I didn't know if you knew about the 17th Colossus, so that's why I was like, well, I don't know that much, and I know more about the controls, so we should end with something that we can talk more about.
You don't want to end
on that. But I was like, it's not optimal, but so we'll go with that. The controls are fine. I think it works in some aspects, and others it doesn't. I think you have to hold X for grip, right?
R1.
So you have to hold a button to grip, and you have to hold it every time for as long as you're gripping.
Mm-hmm.
You have a stamina meter, which I thought was kind of interesting the way they did it.
the circle.
It was just a circle that shrunk, and as it, like, you had a circle, like a dotted line of a circle, and there was a, it was filled up with red, like this kind of like light red. Mm-hmm. And as you gripped more, the red would, the red circle within the dotted line would shrink. So once it got down to nothing, or the circle would disappear,
yeah,
then your grip's gone. So you have to figure out a way to manage climbing the Colossi and making sure you manage your grip, knowing when it's okay to let go of the Colossi. Because that, I think, is one of the scariest mechanics, is because there are times when you have to let, like, the Colossus will try to shake you off.
Oh, yeah.
And it's terrifying because you'll grip, and he just flings Wander like a fucking rag doll. Yeah. He is all over the place.
And you're like 50 feet in the air sometimes. Yeah.
So you have to find ledges that you can stand up on, or be okay just like letting go and hoping that you're going to be okay and you can catch yourself later on.
Yeah.
So you have to find places for your stamina to recharge at times, and you have to know when to do that, because he'll try to the Colossus will try to fling you off.
Can I actually real quick talk about an interesting theory involving why? Because did you ever notice how, like, if you jump off a huge cliff and, like, obviously the death boundary ones kill you because you can't just jump down to the bottom of the map. But if you jump off a cliff or fall off a Colossus, you take very little damage. And somebody said, or I saw like a Reddit post or something that was proposed this theory that was like, what if the Forbidden Lands are so like removed and are in this entire plane of existence of their own that they have a different, like, physics behave almost differently there? Because it basically proposed, what if the gravity is lower there to accommodate these gigantic stone beasts that are walking around? Because if you had normal gravity, they'd be hardly able to move. So
unless they were just really strong,
maybe. But some of them are like there's that one that looks like a llama, like a pinata, and it has those really spindly legs. You feel like that would crush under the
weight.
But
if it's made out of stone,
yeah, I mean, stone can be brittle, but. The more I read about it and thought about it, like, there's a lot.
That's a cool idea.
That
almost not,
backs it up, because like when he jumps, he's very floaty, almost like you almost feel like your stomach rising up into your throat, like you're on a roller coaster or something every time he jumps, because he kind of like, it's very floaty, and like he trips over stuff because it seems like he's kind of awkward and almost doesn't feel like he
flails
fits.
A lot.
Yeah, he flails a lot, and like it feels like he doesn't quite belong there. So. I always found that interesting and thought that was kind of a cool little thing that may or may not be intentional, but if not, it's a cool headcanon.
It seems like I would go the opposite way. It's a cool idea, but I don't know if it's like, I don't know. I think it's kind of like a really weird thing to be like, what if it has different gravity, guys? Like, it just sounds silly. Not going to lie. It's weird because I don't want to like trash it, because I don't think it's like a bad idea, but at the same time, it's not like it's this groundbreaking fan theory.
No, it just,
it's not like, you know, Dorman was your dad all along or something like that.
Yeah. I can send it to you. They're like, there was more than just what I said, but it's interesting. Something cool to think about. But you were talking about the grip meter, and one of my few gripes with this game is I really wish that there was no heads-up display or no UI.
They try to go as minimalistic as possible with it, but
I know,
yeah.
But they could have, like, Eco has nothing. Like, there's nothing cluttering the screen. And Colossus, there's the grip meter, which, if you remove that, they basically could have removed everything and just done audio cues and visual cues. Like, you can see him getting weaker, his grip kind of giving out.
Do you think they would have been able to do that on the PS2 though, to show that level of detail on the PS2? Because that's one of the things, like, one of the hardest things on the PS, not even just the PS2, but with older consoles, when you want to do stuff like that, that's a little bit more difficult, because it's hard to show that level of detail in it, you know? Mm. So I wonder if they just weren't able to or something like that. Because it's, I don't know, because to shake, even if they could do that on a technical level, visually, would it have translated onto the screen, you know? Because
there's audio things they could do too. Like
audio,
you could hear him panting heavier when he's about to let go, type of thing.
That's fair.
As long as they introduce it to you.
I think the problem is that it's like, with that type of thing, when it's a mechanic that's so core to the gameplay, having something subtle that's something very core, having a subtle tell on how to manage that core mechanic doesn't always work. You have to, I could picture maybe gamers, you know, designers and gamers, you know, years down the line who have more and more and more experiences in the language of video games. Because that's a very common thing in game designers, the language of video games and how video game designers pretty much manipulate you to do what they want you to do. Yeah. BioShock does a lot of stuff like that where they kind of call into questioning, like, because the whole game, have you played BioShock, the original?
I never beat it, but I did play it.
There's basically the villain of the game at one point, there's a big plot twist where you kill someone, I won't say who it is, but they say a man chooses, a slave obeys. And the whole game, you're kind of being manipulated into going places and doing things. So when you have to take this person out and they start chanting at you, a man chooses, a slave obeys, it's kind of poking fun at you in a really fucked up way, because you're being manipulated into doing what these game designers want you to do. Yeah. And it's interesting because, I mean, that's making it sound much more sinister than what video games actually are. But it is something to think about, how video games are designed in a way to manipulate the player into doing what the game needs it to do in order to function. Now, obviously, you can go against that, but it kind of ruins the fun of the game.
Yeah.
Like, there's a perfect example. When I was in college, and I was in the game design program at my college, and my teacher was saying, like, they had a bunch of people who never played a video game before, who didn't know this language. And I don't think he was talking about video game language necessarily, but they had them in Grand Theft Auto, and they were driving cars, and they stopped at every stoplight, put on turn signals, turned around. Like, they followed the traffic laws in Grand Theft Auto, and they just did that. They drove around the city following traffic laws. They didn't have that knowledge of the language of video games. So when you have something on the PS2 era, 2005, and even now, I feel like you can't be that subtle right now. Maybe at some point people could be that subtle with how they relay game mechanics and how they relay different meters through sound and through visual. Because I agree, that would be really cool.
I mean, even in Breath of the Wild, there's if Link is too hot and he's taking fire damage, he's panting and he's turning red. And if he's too cold, he's like shivering, and like you can see that he's taking the damage. So I also feel like if anyone could kind of break the mold of mental models of what you expect from games, it's, you know, Team Ico. I almost want to see if there's a mod out there that can just like remove the HUD and see if you could still play it, because the only things that are on screen are the grip, the weapons, when you change weapons, which obviously, duh, he pulls out his sword, you push it again, he pulls out his bow, you push it again, he puts it away, and like the health bars on the enemies. So you stab the enemy, it's bleeding, it's getting hurt. Maybe the sigil that you're stabbing like gets brighter or more dull every time you stab him.
I do see that, but that's not necessarily that subtle. Like a brighter sigil is that's a light that's going on, and game designers use that all the time. Even if you go back to like Half-Life, right? Mm-hmm. Half-Life 2, the way game designers, when they give you open world spaces, one of the biggest challenges is trying to determine, how do you know where to go? And Shadow did it in a very interesting, we didn't even talk about that with the sword.
Briefly.
They did it in a really interesting, organic way that kind of worked. Yo, another connection to Ico, the sword.
Yeah, I don't think it's the same sword. It's not the same sword, but it's there is a sword. A magic sword.
But so a lot of times they use light to direct your eye. So something will be brighter in one section versus the other. I mean, if you look at Uncharted, even they have the platforms that you can climb up on brighter. Like there's yellow tinges of it, or it'll be moss covered except for the areas that you can grip where the rock is bare. So visually you see dark green and then this bright light brown,
or Horizon's yellow,
the red ropes, grass,
or too. Yeah, or the red grass,
the yellow ropes. You're right, the yellow ropes or the red grass. So it gives you these visual indicators, very clear visual indicators as to where you can go. And then, you know, game designers now try to incorporate the heads up display stuff into the story, like Horizon does with the focus.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. I'm trying to think, Halo does with Master Chief's visor, Metroid Prime does with Samus's visor, so on and so forth.
There was one of the Splinter Cell games where the text would show up like on the walls and stuff of the game. Did you ever play that Which series?
Game? Splinter
I
think
it
Cell?
Was, I want to say it was Conviction or no, Double Agent.
It's funny because a friend of the show, Erica, she is a huge Splinter Cell fan, and she's been trying to get me to play them for a while. She actually, she gave me a bunch of original Xbox games, and she gave me all the Splinter Cell games, and they're not tried them yet. So yeah. I need to give it a shot because they're coming out with a Splinter Cell VR game.
Oh, that'd yeah. be cool.
I don't know when, but it's on Oculus, though, so I don't know. I want to play Oculus.
Yeah. but yeah, so we were talking about the controls.
Yeah.
To get back to that. Yeah, you said like they're okay, but kind of going back to Wander feels like kind of awkward. He's not a soldier. Like, so I kind of, and he's also like completely out of his element. Like he has to basically slay mountains, as we've discussed.
Yes.
So I actually kind of like that the controls are a little bit, not weird, but they take a bit of getting used to. So like you holding the button down to keep your grip up, like I love that because you're like, my finger's getting tired. Well, imagine what his hands feel like.
I see, and that's the thing where it's like, I think the controls aren't good in the sense of they're not intuitive, but they are good in the sense that they are immersive.
Yes.
So it's not, you know, it's not easy to pick up. It's not easy to learn the controls of this game, which is, it can be a flaw because when you don't feel in control, the game is a lot less fun. But like you were saying, like you have to hold R1 the whole time. So your finger does get tired having to do that for so long because, like you said, what must his arms feel like?
Yeah.
Having to climb these giant freaking mountains of
fur and stone. Yeah, or like every game now has the dodge roll on square. So rather than having just you push a button to dodge, you have to crouch and then push jump and then, you know, you'll do.
Is that what it is in this?
Yeah,
you have to. I forgot that.
You crouch and maybe it's not jump. Maybe it's just
I don't
X.
think I really used the dodge roll often.
Oh,
well, actually, you know what? Maybe I think I did. I don't remember. It's been like 8 years since I played it or so.
Oh, man. Yeah, I would highly. If you couldn't tell how much I love this game,
no, it's a
definitely
good game.
Play the PS4 remaster. It is gorgeous. Like it's not just like, oh, they took the old one and they made it look good. Like
do
they
you
did
have it
on
physical? Could I borrow it?
I don't. Yeah. I know I'm always so into physical games, but I think. Oh, you know what? It was free for PS Plus.
Oh, okay.
That's why I have
okay.
it. But I don't know if they made a physical one of that.
Yeah,
I'm,
they
I'm
did.
Sure they did.
Yeah, they did. I saw it.
Okay.
I don't own it, but
yeah.
I know that's surprising with my collection. I know, but I newer games are just more expensive. I like to find old games that are like $10 and find something weird to talk about.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's not like the PS3 one where they're like, oh, this looks better than I remember. It's like ground up, completely.
Oh no, I've seen videos of it. It looks beautiful.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Looks beautiful.
Yeah. But sticking with the controls, last thing I have to say about that is something that I really like, as frustrating as it is, and I'm pretty sure I'm alone on this island, is Aggro, the horse, is not always responsive. And that was actually intentional because they didn't want him to feel like a mode of transportation, and they succeeded. He feels like a character.
Because you saw my face when I remember him dying.
I was
like,
just gonna say
that hurts.
Yeah,
it still hurts me right here.
You build this bond up with this character, this horse, and he behaves like a horse. Like when you get off of him, he kind of wanders around. He doesn't always, like, you know,
he's not right up on you like a video game horse.
You have to like whistle for him, and even like if you're going towards like a rock or something, he'll start to veer off preemptively before you even push anything, which some people, Drianna included, were getting frustrated at because it's like, what? It's not, I'm pushing a button in this video game and it's not doing what I want. And it's almost like, have you ever tried to ride a horse? Like sometimes they're animals, they're thinking creatures. They don't always do exactly what you want. And I really like that they did that.
It's good for immersion, but not good for gameplay. Kind of like the controls.
Yeah. There's definitely arguments.
It's good
on
for
both
immersion,
sides.
But not necessarily good for gameplay. And bad gameplay can break your immersion, but it can also, assist with it in a sense. Because like for example, I love the Uncharted games, but Uncharted Lost Legacy, Golden Abyss for the Vita. There's a lot of times where you have to the game will stop and you find these artifacts and you have to literally dust them off using the touchscreen.
Oh, that's cool.
It's immersive and it's a bad gameplay mechanic. It helps with the immersion because you feel like you're, and then you use the bottom touchpad to rotate the treasure so you can dust it off with the top one and rotate
that's
it with
cool.
the bottom one. It was kind of cool, but it also broke the immersion of the game a lot. But it kind of, or it broke the immersion of that. Yeah. So it's like, it's bad. It wasn't fun. It was cool the first time, but after they make you do it like six, or more like I mean, 15 yeah. to 20 times, you're kind of like, oh my God, I get it.
It's one of those things where it's like, it takes you out of the immersion because of what it is, but then you're like, oh man, that's so cool, and it almost, it makes you appreciate it more, which then I guess kind of immerses you more.
I like design stuff like that where they try something different. Yeah. They try to find a unique way to immerse you.
Have you played Phantom Hourglass at all? The Zelda
yes, DS I did. Game? Yeah.
Do you remember the part where you have to transfer, there's like something on the top screen that's on the that you need, it's bottom. Like a stamp or something that yeah. you have to get on your map.
You and literally so you, flip the DS.
You have to close the DS and it like actually stamps it. That blew my mind when I played that. I
they
like,
also did stuff in that game where you had to like, the guy wanted you to shout for a good deal.
Yeah.
When I was playing that, I was on an airplane. And so in Phantom Hourglass, Zelda Phantom Hourglass, you're supposed to, you meet this merchant, he wants you to shout, make a lot of noise for a good deal, so he'll give you a good discount. And I was on an airplane, so I can't just yell into this thing for, you know, like 30 seconds.
Did you just blow into it?
I didn't do that. What I did was I put my finger over where the mic was, and I just went like, I just like,
it's just, hey yell.
I don't know if that's going to come through. That might be really bad. Who knows? But yeah, I just rubbed over top of it really fast, and it worked. Yeah. And I was like, oh, awesome. I cheated the system. And then the guy has the audacity to be like, you know, you don't have to yell. You could have just like blown into it or like clapped or like snapped your fingers right into the microphone. And he even said something like, you look really stupid just yelling at him. Like, you son of a bitch, like trolling me like that.
I was playing late at night when that happened. And I was like, I'm not just going to yell and wake up my whole house. So I just was like, just into the mic. And it was like, wow, you could have just blown into it. And I was like, that's what I did. Thanks for coughing right into my face.
I coughed into my elbow, not your elbow.
Oh, we got the Rona now.
No, it's the Bona. I don't know.
Oh my.
I'm gonna cut that.
No, leave it in. No, leave it in. Yours, no, leave the Bona in. Anyway, video games are fun.
Yes, they are. All right, so let's talk about the 17th Colossus.
Yes,
I want to hear what you know about this. So, while you're getting your notes ready for it.
Yeah, I'm just making sure there's nothing that I haven't said.
The 17th Colossus is an urban legend, a gaming urban legend.
Yes, but before we get into that, the last thing I wanted to say, and I was going to say this about the world. Oh yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
So remember when I said that there's like tiny subtle clues visually that lead you to things? I didn't notice it until this most recent playthrough that there's certain, there'll be like a red flower or something, just something so small that'll visually like guide your eye to this area. And if I go where this is, then the thing will slam into the pillar underneath me and I'll drop, you know, the whole platform onto its head. Or there's like doves that'll be like near a slightly hidden cave entrance that you'll see them kind of fly down and land there, and it'll just kind of very subtly like guide your eye to where you need to go. Or like that hawk that flies around that you can actually jump up and grab. Have you ever done that?
No.
You can. Do you know what I'm talking about, the hawk?
I think so. Yeah.
It usually follows you from the main temple whenever you're leaving. You can actually, if you like go up a hill as it's coming down just right, you can jump off of the horse and grab onto the hawk. And it's kind of like the chickens or the cuckoos in Zelda. Like, it'll slowly like bring you back down to the ground, which I thought was just a funny little thing. Like, why would you add that in? You can do that to fish too. There's like fish swimming in some of the water.
You can grab
levels.
A fish midair and float down with it.
Yeah, whenever there's impressive. A flying fish. No, there's like certain underground areas where there'll be water, you can dive under and there'll be like big fish that you can just grab onto the back of, and it just kind of
really cool. They don't try to eat you.
No, they don't. Right, it's just a cool little thing. But the last thing I want to say about the world and like the loneliness of it, I think a huge portion of why you feel that is because there's really clever things that they do with the camera. If you're going towards like a huge mountain or something, the camera will really subtly pull out and to the side. Wander and the horse are like just kind of down in the corner a little bit, allowing you to just get a full view of this gorgeous but barren and sad landscape. And that's always stuck with me. And that was also another thing that people sometimes say, like, oh, the camera's kind of annoying. But I'm like, dude, I love it.
Because I didn't have an issue with the camera. Yeah. I thought you could control it pretty easily.
You can. But it's like, typically, video games are, I'm in the center of the screen at all times because I'm important and I'm the main character. And this game is, no, like, you're a small, insignificant speck. It's all about the world, and it's about these gigantic creatures.
I didn't have an issue with the camera at all. I think the overall controls, you know, I had some issue with, but overall, I think it was fine. That's weird. Yeah. That's an interesting criticism.
Yeah.
Okay. The 17th Colossus. So it's an urban legend. It's been found out later that it's not, doesn't actually, because you can, you know, break into the code and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's like the reason there's an urban legend through a lot of stuff that, which I'm sure you'll explain, that there's a 17th Colossus somewhere in the game, somewhere hidden in the game world. And there was years of blogging and fan posting and like theories and theory crafting. And there's years and years of just information of people trying to figure out where this 17th Colossus is. And it's kind of a bummer that it doesn't actually exist in the game. I mean, it kind of exists because they had the other 24, they had 24 Colossuses and Colossi and 48 and originally 48. But yeah, so
there's concepts of them, but I don't think anything's concrete actually like in the game itself.
No, there's nothing in the game, which is kind of a bummer. But but leading up to it was really cool.
Yeah, the way that they handled this was so cool. So just like a schoolyard rumor, you can get Mew in Pokemon if you push that truck over underneath SSN. Like, rumors started to spread that there was a secret Colossus that was not somewhere hidden in the game, either like inaccessible because of actual programming stuff, or some people thought you had to open this door. But basically, there was, like you said, there's pages and pages of this one thread on some forum where people tried for years to find like the secret Colossus, and through it they found a bunch of other unused stuff. There's people were going into like clipping into walls and stuff and finding like big portions of unfinished areas of like waterfalls and like other temples, but no one ever found the 17th Colossus. But somehow this someone called
that should have been the tagline for the episode. I ride horses.
Yeah, I still like mountains. Yeah. Some mountains are slain.
Some mountains are
scaled. Others are slain.
Yeah.
So this user on this forum named Nomad Colossus came up with this thing called the theory of intersecting points, and I don't know how they came up with it, but basically it was like, there's cave etchings and like little hieroglyphs and stuff that basically showed you where these four points are on the map, and where they intersect, there's this huge door that was hidden like really deep into the game. Like the map is actually really big.
It's
and
huge.
You barely touch it going to even through all the Colossi, and there's tons of just empty space. And basically they found this gigantic door. And that started a whole thing, like, oh, that's where it is. That's where the Colossi is. Or Colossus is. Colossi? I don't know.
Whatever. Colossus. Colossi would be multiple.
Colossi is.
Is multiple Colossi.
Multiple, yeah. I don't know why, because we always did the singuli thing.
Yeah, the joke.
Yeah.
Singuli. Multiple singulars.
Multiple single things. Or just multiple things. So there's this door. People are trying to figure out how to open it. They're trying to glitch through it. Like, nothing's working. And it becomes like this whole movement, and then nothing came of it until I guess the developers caught wind of this Nomad Colossus person who like basically broke the game and like found all this stuff, but never a Colossus. So what they did in the PS4 remake, when you beat the game, the credits roll, and at the very end, in the special thanks, it says, special thanks to Nomad Colossus and the 79 Steps of Enlightenment. So people were like, what is that?
I haven't heard of this part, yeah, actually. The 79
this is where
Steps
it gets,
of Enlightenment. Okay.
Slightly getting chills now because I'm a huge nerd and I love this game. They hid 79 little points of light, or they call them coins, because when you collect one, it just kind of goes like ding. But it's really just a little tiny glowing spot on the ground in only the PS4 remake. When you get and they're hidden in every corner of the world. There's almost
and it's probably
80 of
really
them.
Hard to find.
They
well,
are
literally almost 80 because it's 79.
Yeah,
go on.
I only found. I didn't go on a huge hunt for them because I knew what it was that you did, and I didn't feel like spending all the time to find them. But I found some of them just through casual play, and they don't tell you what they are. And you basically, when you find them all, the door opens. That door that Nomad Colossus found, it opens up and there's a sword in there that I don't know if it does more damage or something, but it's like, it's just a really nice little button that they
pretty
put
awesome.
In there to tie up that whole thing, just kind of as a reward for the fans. And I think that's just so cool.
I didn't know about the 17th Colossus when I did my top 10 like gaming urban legends or something like that. I did a gaming urban legends video. I did like Polybius, or you ever heard of Polybius?
No.
Oh, that's a good one.
Uh-oh.
Some of them are spooky pastas, like Ben Drowned and that
stuff. Ben, the Majora's Mask.
Yeah, that's a good spooky creepy pasta. Not spooky pasta. That's his twin cousin.
Spooky pasta is
twin cousin.
I was gonna say spooky pasta is when you go to the store and they have like black and orange pumpkin shaped pasta.
Real quick, Polybius is a gaming urban legend. It's an arcade cabinet, and it was believed to have existed in the 80s, where it was in mainly Seattle. It was like originally thought to be in the Seattle area. There was an arcade there. Basically, these men in like suits, these black suits, wheeled in this arcade cabinet, and they would come in periodically to check on it. And there was reports of kids like having seizures after playing it, or like passing out after playing for like 2 minutes.
It's like the Lavender Town music
or
thing.
Like going or some reports of people dying from it. And there was some because people were like, since it looked like government agents were coming in to get readings off of this machine. And so people are wondering, is this like some type of experiment, like mind control, or there's a lot of theories as to what it is. And then
this is some Stranger Things.
And then it just disappeared. And there's no evidence of ever finding a Polybius cabinet.
What?
Yeah. It's an urban legend.
That's so weird.
There's a lot of crazy stuff on it. Now,
I wonder if it's like a Mandela effect.
There's been stuff that's come out about it since where it's most likely a conflation of a lot of different random events that have turned into a story that aren't actually connected. So for example, there is a kid that died playing an arcade game, but he was there for like over 72 hours and didn't drink water. So he just died from not drinking water.
Buddy,
and stuff
Street
like
Fighter
that.
Can wait.
Yeah, it was stuff like Like that was pretty much, I mean, what a way to go, right? That was probably a hell of a last 72 hours of your life or something like that.
I beat Shao Kahn!
And so, but then there's other ones of, you know, kids passing. I think one was a kid passing out, maybe not dying, maybe just passing out because of that same reason, though. And the reason why you would have people coming in suits is because Seattle was a test market for a lot of arcade games. So it wouldn't be surprising to have employees of those arcade companies coming in and getting readings to test stuff out. So there's a lot of things that you could explain away.
That's not as fun of a story.
Much more realistic things. But Polybius is a really good urban the gaming urban legend.
I have to look into that.
That's a fun one. They're actually
Half-Life 3 is also a gaming urban legend.
Yeah, some say Gabe Newell has it in his basement. No,
Gabe Newell probably has a lot of things in his basement.
Oh, come on.
Have you seen the guy?
Yeah, come on, he seems like a good guy.
I'm sure he is.
But but I like the idea of gaming urban legends. I like the fact that there are such a thing.
Yeah,
the fact that the 17th Colossus went as long as it did. And I think
hundreds of pages on this forum.
And I think
for
what's
years.
Crazy, too, is that somebody found a secret door. Like, how cool must that have been? And those people must have felt like they were hacking the NSA or something like that. Yeah. Like, oh my God, we broke the code. We're in. And then they find this door and it's nothing.
Like, I know.
It's such a bummer. But it's such a cool idea, though. Like,
They were rewarded in the end.
They were.
I love that.
Well, that one guy was rewarded. He was credited.
He was,
but it was definitely
he did the most of the work.
But it was definitely the sum of the community's parts.
Oh,
like they put a lot of the work into it to make it what it was, to make that urban legend what it was. And it's a bummer that it doesn't actually exist, it's still cool that it's just one of those things where it's like that's an era of gaming that I'm sure something like it will come again. There's some really cool stuff like that. Actually, I have a couple. I'm going to look up some other ones for you that I had on that episode, because there is some, or you should listen to it. There's some really creepy ones. There is like one, I can't remember the name of the game anymore, but basically it was like an old PC game, and it gave, once you beat it, it gave coordinates, and you, if you could, no one could beat the game except one guy did. And when he went there, there was a dead body there and stuff like that. And I think that was a creepypasta as well. I don't remember. But it, there's some really there's some really good ones out there.
Yeah, you talk about like that era of gaming, and I was gonna ask you this in the Eco episode, but do you, like, I'm trying to think. Obviously, these games inspired a lot of things. Not quite like I see a lot of Shadow of Colossus in the world of Dark Souls. I see obviously Titan Souls is basically 8-bit or 16-bit Shadow of Colossus, but I don't think any game has really come close to the same kind of feel. Like, that sense of wonder obviously comes back in things like Horizon and Breath of the Wild, but I've not since played a game that made me feel the same way that Shadow of the Colossus did, or Eco.
And the sense of wonder is relative to the experience. Like, I had a sense of wonder from Horizon Zero Dawn, but it was nowhere near the sense I got from this game.
Yeah, like, and it's a different flavor entirely.
It's just, when it's that I think for now, for me as an adult now, what gives me that sense of wonder is when a game promises something and then delivers in it in a way that you weren't expecting to live up to your expectations. So perfect example, Breath of the Wild to an extent, just because when it said you can go anywhere, you literally can go anywhere in that game. With this game, when you told me, you're climbing these colossi, I'm like, oh, okay. But normally, like I said, when games tell you that, they find, I think back to Halo. Halo 2, when you have to climb on the scarab.
Yeah.
And it's a cool moment, but the way you climb up on the scarab is that you just find a bridge, and it's not as impressive. It's cool when it happens in the game, but it's not as like wondrous, because you're not following the scarab trying to hunt it down through buildings and like keeping an eye on it through windows like you would see in an action movie.
Oh, that would be
and
really
then
cool.
You jump down on top of it. In Shadow Colossus, you would scale that scarab. You would find a way to climb up that. And whether it was finding some tower to jump off onto the top of it, or as we saw with the flying one, you know, wait for it to swoop down so you could grab onto it. But it just, that was so, when I played that and I saw that, no, you are literally climbing it. Like you are doing the exact thing. It felt real.
Yeah,
it felt like if I saw that Colossus in real life and I had to climb up and put a sword in its fontanelle, that's awful. That's so bad. That's what it was in the first one. It's right the soft spot at the top. It's so fucked up.
It is.
Are these all children?
You gotta oh, no.
Oh, my God.
You got to stab it in the back of the knee first to get it to fall down. It's always just like, ooh.
Yeah. So you have to, it gets me so sad thinking about these poor, like, digital non-existent creatures.
I know. Because they had so much life to them, the way that they moved. And, like, do you ever notice that their eyes change? Like, if they're walking around and they're blue, but if they notice you, or if they, as soon as they perceive you as a threat, their eyes turn to orange.
Yeah.
I love that.
And you had to shoot a couple of them in the eye to get them to fall over.
Oh, but like you said, a lot of them are literally just walking around, or they're only attacking you because you're like encroaching on their territory, or they perceive you as a threat. Some of them are just doing nothing, and you just walk up like, stab, this god told me to do it.
Because this doorman is a piece of shit. I would like find if I was in Wander's shoes, I'd find some way to take Dorman out with me. I'm like, from hell's heart, I stab at thee, and I just kill myself off. Like that would pull, like, you ever see The Exorcist?
No.
Do you care about spoilers for that movie? Because I know you're not a scary movie fan.
No, that's why I'll probably never watch it.
The end of the movie, they get the demon out of Reagan, the little girl, and the priest sacrifices himself he's like, get out of her, like, come into me, and whatever the demon is goes into him, and then he throws himself out a window and lands on his neck, so that way it kills him and the demon with him. Like, he takes the demon out with him. So before the demon can fully take control of him, he sacrifices himself. So, like, why couldn't Wander do that? Just take yourself out and don't let Dorman do his shit.
It was too late by then.
It was.
I mean, he did get sealed in again at the very end, so.
And as far as you know, wanders back to normal. So
yeah, he's just got horns now. He's just a horny boy.
I don't think we can end the episode there. But is there anything else that you wanted to say about Shadow of the Colossus that we have not talked about? We've talked a lot about our feelings for it. I think we did a good job of dissecting down the allegory of it, what we interpreted out of the story. We talked about the controls, how they're kind of wonky but kind of awesome at the same time. The 17th Colossus. There's just so many cool things. And if you haven't been able to tell just how much we both like it, obviously him more than me, but it's still, that game really spoke to me at a time when I, you know, especially, 2012, 2013, that's when, gaming was being a lot more safe than it is now, even. Mm. With the exception of Last of Us and Bioshock Infinite, it was a lot of just shooters.
Call of Duty every day, it felt
and,
like.
I mean, don't get me wrong, you saw the standouts like Demon's Souls and Dark Souls, which I hate, but once again, I don't think they're bad games. I just hate them because I'm bad at them.
I hate them too, but I also love them.
they're meant for a specific, you know, audience and gameplay style, and it just,
you have to hate yourself a certain amount.
A little bit of it, yeah. A little bit of oh my gosh, I forgot the word for
masochism.
That's it. You have to be a little bit of a masochist. Yeah. I, for some reason, can think of that.
Vanilla.
Is there anything else about Shadow that we didn't talk about that you wanted to?
The only thing is that my favorite part about the PS4 remake was that you could turn off the hints.
Was there hints throughout the PS2 version?
Yeah. Oh, they're so annoying. And it was funny. I was playing it with Driana, and I knew they were coming because, you know, she's playing the first one, trying to figure it out. And then Dorman's voice comes in that's like, "You must scale to the top of the Colossus." Oh, we can talk about the language thing after this because this is kind of a dumb thing. But
yeah,
he's like, "You must climb the Colossus." And she's like, "Yeah, I know." And I'm like, "You can turn him off in this one, you know." And she's like, "Nah, I'll leave him." Because she got kind of like, I was a little bit pushy because you can change the controls to like a more modern control layout, or you can keep the original. And I was like, "Oh no, keep the original." And she's like, "Stop telling me what to do. This looks more comfortable, so I'm going to change it." And I'm like, "Oh, you can turn the hints off." And she's like, I haven't heard them at all, so I don't know if I'm going to like them or not. And then as soon as it was like, "Oh, you must climb to the top." She's like, "Yeah, I know." And then she still couldn't figure it out. And 30 seconds later, it was like, "You must climb to the..." She's like, "All right, I'm turning these off now." So that was another kind of immersion breaking thing that I really didn't like, but that I'm glad that they did better in the PS4. You can turn them off so you don't have this voice in your head, and it literally makes you figure them all out. But speaking of
the language
of Dorman, and I don't know if it's the same language in Eco, but it's something that I really like, and I think really keeps you engaged and tied into these like fantastical worlds, is that they're speaking a complete nonsense language, and even more so in Eco. Like, Yorda and Eco can't understand each other because they're both speaking nonsense languages, and
the queen can speak to both of them.
Yeah,
she can speak in Eco's language and in Yorda's language.
That's true. The weird like little hieroglyph drawing
wingdings.
But pretty much. Yeah. But I really liked that because it wasn't one, like, it's kind of unifying. They don't, obviously from a game design standpoint, like, they don't have to dub it in a bunch of languages. You don't have to worry about bad voice acting because it's, everyone's going to hear it and it's going to hit their ear the same exact way, and it's going to be nonsense to everyone. But it's unifying in that everyone's on the same kind of playing field, no matter what language you're in. It feels foreign and it feels different, and it
adds to that sense of loneliness because you don't feel connected to this world. It isolates you from both Wander, in a sense, even though you're controlling Wander, and the world that you're kind of inhabiting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a weird kind of, like, probably because we studied Japanese a little bit and it's a Japanese game, but I pick up on things that kind of sound Japanese. Like, I don't know if it's like Japanese symbols rearranged or Japanese syllables rearranged, because I know at one point Eco comes running over to Yorda and says like something along the lines of "Daijoubu," and it's like, "Are you okay?" It's like "Daijo" or like something like that. So I wonder how much actual language is in there. I wonder if you can translate. I never thought about, can you translate the language?
It's possible.
Leave a comment below if you can translate.
I talked to Game Dave on the Final 10 episode about like what is Albed like in Japanese, because Albed in English was, they just took the English language and just switch letters around. A is R. So and then they found a way to make pronounce it to be like, this is a word with no vowels, but it sounds good.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I'd be curious to see that.
Anything else though? Anything else? Is that the last thing?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I could probably think of something, but I just,
we've been going for a little bit on this.
It's been going, and I kind of expected this, but
what is our time? Actually,
it's a game. You could probably
hour and 34 hour. That's 34.
Not that's too bad. Good. I thought it was going to be like 3 hours, but it just hit me in a like particular place, and it just left its mark on me. It's one of those.
That sounds like a personal problem.
I mean, I'm working through this with my therapist currently. No. But it's one of those games where it's like you said, it may not be the best game on the PS2, but it's one of the most important.
It really showed what a video game experience could be, because up until that point, you had games that like experimented, you know, like even look back at the PS1 era, like Pow Rappa the Rapper and Jammer Lammy. But yes.
It's all in the mind.
Like, I wouldn't really say those were like profoundly impactful experiences, or they didn't intend to be.
It was
like,
just experimental.
Because you can still have those, because, you know, everything's relative to the person. So yeah. someone could have had a really profound, impactful moment from that game for themselves. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that was the intention of the game. Versus this, I really feel like it was intentionally designed, maybe not to create something as like, we're going to legitimize video games as a high art form, but it was definitely intended with this very somber, lonely attitude, and
that subtractive kind of design process. Nothing else is like that.
No, and there's very few games that still do stuff like this. I can't think of any either. I mean, The Last Guardian kind of does, when that was the spiritual sequel to this game.
Yeah,
Hell, even games like Bloodborne and Dark Souls, there's a lot of combat in it's similar ish.
Dark Souls feels like, in some ways, like a love letter to games like that, because Dark Souls is also
even
very
though Demon's
lonely.
Souls came out only like 4 years after.
I know.
Shadow.
I never played that, but I did get a profound sense of loneliness when I played Dark Souls for the first time, because there's very few NPCs. There's tons of lore in the world, like unspoken lore that in like empty corners of the world, just like Shadow, where it's what is this? What did this used to be before? Like, why am I so sad?
I do think there's something cool, but I mean, it's weird because like, I don't always like that type of world building, not the world building of building the world and story through the world itself. But I mean like that loneliness sense, like that loneliness aesthetic that they kind of add to it. And it's, I don't mind it, but I have to be in a mood for it, because it is kind of like, it's a hard line to walk to balance that between jumping into being pretentious about like, this is the meaning of life, and life is empty because I am so deep because I hate the world. And it's a very fine line, which it does not cross into that.
No.
And I think the game does a really good job of kind of balancing that, because even at the end, while all the shit's going wrong, everything's going on, Wander has ruined himself and his world for his own gain, and he gets punished for it. Dorman, you know, possesses him and then gets taken away, and now Wander's a kid, but he does succeed in his goal. He rescues the girl. He rescues Mono, I guess is her name. Mm-hmm. Still, I think we got that right.
I think it's Mono.
he succeeds, but it's like he went through such a great personal toll, and he took out a lot of he killed these peaceful beings, the Colossi, that were admittedly at the same time, though, how did, to kind of go into that world building thing, did if part of Dorman is in those Colossi, who put them there? Were these beings that were created to hold the parts of Dorman, or were these just innocent creatures that, because of their size, because of what they are, they're able to take part of this demonic force and not let it corrupt them?
Yeah.
And either way, it's a tragic thing that you kind of had to do to get what you want. You took out, it's almost a little environmental.
So it's
environmentalist message.
So it's actually really funny that you say that, because that reminded me of another thing I wanted to say about the game. Do you know about the Secret Garden?
No.
So after the credits roll and Mono picks up the Wander, I guess, as a baby, and they're walking away with Aggro, like limping along. Such a good boy. They show, like, it kind of like fades in and out, and then they show them all in this beautiful like garden, and there's fruit and birds, and there's a deer, and that garden is actually on the very top of the temple that you're in, like the main temple. And in the PS2 one, it was intended that, you know, every time you kill a lizard, you take the tail and your stamina gets bigger.
Yeah.
So
we didn't talk about that, but yeah.
I thought we did. So you can,
maybe we did.
In the PS4 one, it's like a bar now instead of the circle. But the circle one literally would just, it would get bigger and bigger and take up more and more of the screen, like the more stamina you had. So basically, if you got enough stamina and you're it would never end. I don't think there was an end point because you could keep doing it. It would take up so much of the screen. You could climb up the entire outside of the tower of like the main temple and get to that secret garden that's at the very top.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
So in the PS2 one, you could kind of do a weird, I've done it only because you could do like this weird zigzag jump that would, it was a glitch and it wouldn't actually take your stamina down. So you could kind of like hop, 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 hop. And I've gotten up there and you can go across the bridge. You have to walk because it's obviously the horse can't get up there. But if you walk all the way down the bridge, like when you, if you try to leave the way that you came in, there's like this really strong wind that kind of like pushes you back, which I thought was kind of an interesting thing that they added, almost like anticipating people
that
would
a player
do it.
Would go up top there. Yeah.
So, but when you get to the very top, there's that secret garden. It's beautiful. There's animals. There's like fruit growing on the trees and stuff. And at that point, your stamina gauge is probably so big that it's taking up like a quarter of your screen. If you shoot down one of the fruit and you eat it, your stamina goes all the way back down to where it started.
What?
Yeah. So it's almost like this, is it an allegory about greed? Like you become so greedy that it's overtaking you.
You make it to paradise and that's still not enough.
Yeah.
That's that also makes me think, though, just because, you know, I mentioned the final 10 episode. I'm a little religious, but, you know, not chubby about it.
A lot of people call it like the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's a very Garden of Eden type of thing. That's wild.
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to end this episode, man.
Just think about that for a second.
Check yourself before you wreck this. No, I think that's a good place to end this episode, though. It's a good place to end the video, too. It's an hour. It's a long. Yeah, this is a long one.
Thanks for sticking with us.
This was a lot of fun.
Or though. Watch.
Andrew, thank you so much for joining me for both Eco and for this one. I knew we were going to go longer on this one than Eco, and I wanted to as well, not just because I like this game more, but also I think this game just, it's more fun than Eco. Yeah. No offense, Eco.
No, that's the thing. It's a great game in its own right, but this one just for me just hit so much closer to home.
So where can the good people find you who are not watching this on YouTube, people on my feed who can where can the good people find you online?
So you can actually watch video footage of this on our YouTube channel. It's The Experience Point. Just Google or just YouTube search The EXP Point. You can also find us across all social medias at The Experience Point, same thing, The EXP Point. And then I'll also be uploading this in audio format to our podcast feed, which is also on Google and Stitcher and Spotify and all that. So basically just Google The Experience Point and we'll come up and you can digest us however you want to.
As for me, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Still Loading Pod on all of them. Feel free to reach out to me there. I like talking to people. I like interacting. I usually post pictures of my video game collection a lot just to see what people think. I like to give little history snippets on that too.
Yeah. Please leave comments. Like the part of why I started The Experience Point is because I want to share experience with other people. So like if you think that I'm an idiot for loving this game, like tell me. Or if you love it as much as me, also tell me. Let's talk about it and like get the conversation going in the comments.
And then if you want to email me, stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. You can also support the show in a couple of different ways. Easiest way for everyone, just giving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use, both for my feed and also for the Experience Point feed. That helps gain exposure for the show. More people find it, like especially Apple Podcasts, like that. The more reviews and specifically reviews, like the ratings are great too. The ratings are excellent, and but if they have a review, it helps Apple push that to more people.
We
both of us have Patreons. You have patreon.com/stillloadingpod for the podcast, for mine. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. For you, it's patreon.com/theEXP.
Yep, it's just the EXP point, EXP all one point. Word. Again, $1 a month will help us grow and get more people seen and get us some new fancy microphones like this, because I know as soon as I hear this, I'm going to be like, ooh, this is way better than
this,
mine.
This is it's not actually as expensive as you think for all this stuff, too. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was a lot if you get it all at once, but if you kind of break it up bit by bit, it's a good investment. As you can check out the network I'm a part of, podbeardnetwork.com. You can go to that website and see all the great shows on the network. And finally, the most important shout out is the network, or not the network. Well, no, I'm part of a network, but the nonprofit I'm partnered with and I'm helping support, the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to consider donating and check out what they do, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating.
That's great. I love the name of that, Bit by Bit Foundation. Yeah. As a like someone in graphic design and marketing, like
I will show you their logo because it's not awful.
Oh, okay.
Well. It's actually a friend of mine that I used to work with is one of the board members of it. When I worked at a grocery store like years ago.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I remember
those
days.
He started it with a bunch of his friends, and I saw that, I was like, oh, you guys want to partner up? Like, I promote your guys' stuff. Like, that's pretty much it. Like, I just want to help out in any way I can. Mm. So that's the Bit by Bit Foundation. And that should do it for this. This is the last game episode of the summer of PS2. This was this has been a ride for all the games here.
Yeah, anyone who's just hearing Josh's lovely voice and hearing about his podcast on our feed, definitely go check out his podcast. He did a whole series on PS2 games. He's done you did the whole 40 for 40 thing where you put up just crazy amounts of content. If you are familiar with our channel, you know Driana. She was just on for a Kingdom Hearts episode for his summer of PS2 series, so definitely go check those out. They're real good.
And that should do it for this episode of Still Loading in this episode of The Experience Point.
Yeah.
So thank you all once again for listening. Thank you, Andrew, for joining me.
Yeah, thank you. Likewise.
And I will see you all next time.